I'm Kurt Benkert, and this is Pocket Presence, powered by Sleeper. Here we go. Another week rolls by, and we're that much closer to football. And some would say we even have real football tonight. Others would not. Tonight, meaning the night we're recording this episode, is the night of the Hall of Fame game. I once played in the Hall of Fame game, Tyler. Do you want to know what happened? You might already know.
No, I don't know what happened.
You don't know what happened. I was balling out, and I snapped my toe. I got rolled up on.
Oh.
The top of my toe touched the top of my foot, dislocated it, tore the ligament underneath, the big turf toe ligament, and I was out for the year, and that was it. Got rolled up on a really bad high school turf field, and the rest was history. So shout out to the Hall of Fame game. Pour one out.
Did you know in that moment that you were screwed?
No, I didn't know until the moment after. I actually stayed in for a second play, and I was like, okay, like I didn't know what happened. And come to find out, your turf toe ligament is a lot like an Achilles ligament, where if you try to push off of it and it's not there, you're just going to fall down. And so I stayed in for another play, went to go throw a bubble screen and use my push, like my foot to push off on, and my foot just gave out. And I'm like went to go throw it, rewound it because I realized I couldn't step, and then I just threw the ball into the stands and hobbled to the sideline. I was like, I don't know what happened, guys, but I was in shock. And then they take my cleat off on national television, pan in on my foot, I believe, and my toes just flopped, dude. Dislocated toe, torn ligament, and it was a long year. But yeah, Hall of Fame game.
You asked a question. Yeah, you asked a question. Football, maybe not football. I mean, like, what is the preseason like for you when you're playing? Because I'm sure different guys, it probably means different things.
Yeah, I think it's really team dependent. A lot of times in preseason, you see the really good teams lose a lot of games and the bad teams win games. The bad teams need their better players to play to get the rust knocked off. The good teams, the gooder teams, need their younger players to get more reps to evaluate because they already know what their guys look like and they already know what the season looks like. With that, a lot of the teams that I've been on never game planned for anything in preseason. We never had things dialed up. We weren't just going out there slinging. We were running generic plays that had a one high answer and a two high answer. And a lot of times they just want to see, can the line block? Can the quarterback process? And can your receivers win on one-on-one coverage? And then vice versa on defense, they like to call a lot of man most of the time because they want to see if guys can cover in man. That's typically the harder one. So you'll get some other teams like the Jets when I played them in preseason who were with a new coach and they were coming out in nickel double A and blitzing and peeling and like all this other bullshit we didn't prepare for. However, not a lot of teams do that. And it's really just a test of what's the personnel look like, who's who, what can they do in a live situation.
Do you think there's any correlation between teams doing good or bad in the preseason? How much should fans read into their team? And I think of the Ravens who were on this 20 plus game win streak in the preseason. And they've obviously performed well in the regular season. Mm-hmm. But then you have probably some shit teams that will win all of their preseason games.
Yeah.
Should fans get excited about that?
Absolutely not. It is a smokescreen. I think the biggest thing you need to focus on is individual player performances. And you need to lock in on like, what do guys look like versus other guys, right? Like in live situations that's not practice, that involves reactions and making plays, what do guys look like in a somewhat live situation? It's live, but preseason's a little different. I think that's what you need to focus on because at the end of the day, you go from a 90-man roster to a 53-man roster. So a lot of people that are playing in preseason won't even be on a team. So to get excited about guys that won't be there necessarily, it's really you just want to get a gauge on who's going to be sticking around. What can they do? Log that memory bank of what type of player they are and get your eyes focused on the regular season.
Does it get frustrating as a player? I think about how scheme dependent it feels like a lot of players are on the offensive side of the ball, especially. So you're running these vanilla looks and plays in the preseason. Does it feel like, man, I'm just not getting the chance? Like I'm being set up to fail almost.
Yeah, you're definitely not like you're not set up to succeed. I'll say that in preseason, especially. I actually saw an article about Brock Purdy, how he's such a bad practice player, especially in training camp. And that's because the offense is not scheming to beat the defense. They're trying to go over their base install. They're trying to teach the young guys the routes and the timing and the cadence and the pass protection schemes. You're trying to go rule by rule. Shanahan's not dialing it up to run throwback wheels and stuff against the starting defense, especially not in the first week or two of the training camp cycle. So a lot of these schemes that are very dependent on, hey, this is the guy we're targeting this game. We want to try to get the ball to him. Hey, this is the defensive guy we're trying to abuse this game. This is the monster up like on the defensive line that we're going to be doubling all game long. You don't get that out of training camp and you don't get that out of preseason. They do that in the very last week, but they normally do it in-house and they don't carry that stuff over to a game. Same thing with like audibles and like man beaters and stuff. Like I was told to specifically not use hand signals in preseason games that would be used in the regular season. So when you're audibling a route, if they press both people to get a rub route going, like there's just a lot of handcuffing that happens where it can get pretty annoying, especially if it's when you're on a good team or a team that's supposed to be good. You don't really get a chance to go and show what you can do. Where if you go to a bad team, like they're trying to just air it out and get everybody caught up and make big plays, like that's a different situation.
Talk about quarterbacks specifically. There's going to be a lot of rookie quarterbacks this year, especially that fans are going to be looking at, reading into every snap they have. But at the same time, they're going to be playing these sort of vanilla looks that put them behind the eight ball. So what are you looking for, especially from these rookie quarterbacks, to see this guy's got it, this guy doesn't, when you're understanding the sort of scheme they're playing in the preseason?
I want to see how much of the game they can play within a vacuum. So what's his footwork? What's his timing? His rhythm? Like, is he somewhat accurate? Because the receivers he's going to be throwing to in a real game are not going to be the same ones in preseason most of the time. The timing is going to be better with guys that you're used to throwing to. A lot of the receivers are not going to be there. And I just think in general, you want to see how this guy can play in a vacuum. And then outside of that, what plays can he make with his feet to extend and kind of be a stud? Like those are the, that's what I'm looking at. I'm not looking at stats. I'm not looking at really a whole lot besides, can he take what he's doing in air, like routes on air period, and apply it with a line in front of him? That's what I want to see.
All right, Kurt, speaking of quarterbacks, our guy, my guy, Jordan Love got paid 4 years, $220 million, a $75 million signing bonus, annualized out to $55 million a year, which puts him in the Joe Burrow, Trevor Lawrence category. What do you make of this deal?
I love it. I think getting him right now in this part of the market, right? Like QB market's going up, but lock your guy in now because 2 to 3 years from now, $55 million a year is going to be a deal. I also think he's in such a unique situation where he doesn't have guys around him that are, quote, studs that need to get paid like studs. He has really good value guys. And I think for the Packers, that formula is just going to work. They have a lot of money on defense. Offense is super young and they have a few years before they have to pay any receivers. So at the end of the day, the way I'm looking at it is Jordan got paid now. They probably won't have to pay anybody really heavily next year. So by the time he's in year three of this deal, they might have to pay a receiver. That's going to be a pretty good discount. $55 million a year, 3 years from now when they need to go pay a receiver, maybe $15, $20, $30 million, who knows, a year. I think for them, timing-wise, it's really good. Where I look at other teams and I look at like the Bengals, like I think it's harder to pay a guy like Burrow $55 million when they've got Ja'Marr Chase they got to pay. They've got like not a really great defense either. Like there's roster-wise, the Packers somehow have a way to go and pay a quarterback and their roster doesn't get like cut super tight from it. So I think every team is different. Cap's different everywhere else. But Jordan obviously showed that he could elevate a group of guys around him that were all younger and make them rise to his occasion. I think that's why he earned to get paid what he did.
If you were building around Jordan now, where would you focus on spending money next?
Keep it up front. He showed you that if you can block and give him time, he can make plays and it doesn't matter who's out there at receiver. Obviously, you need to hit some gems in the draft classes, which they've been showing to do in the later rounds at receiver. But man, keep Jordan upright, keep him safe, and I think you're going to have a good thing for a long time.
I just want to point out how good of a deal Patrick Mahomes' contract looks like right now. He signed a 10-year, $450 million deal a couple years ago. It was up to $475 million with guarantees, close to half $1 billion. And he makes something like, based on that average, like $45 million a year, which is a full $10 million less than Trevor Lawrence, who's someone that you're not even a fan of. So all that's to say, like, you lock in your guy now, the deal's going to look great in 3 years when it's time for renegotiation.
Exactly. And for Mahomes' sake, like, that's why they're able to run it back, man. Like they locked him in for a long time, pushed some of that money in the future, and they got a Madden deal going on, like max years, max contract. Like they're set and ready to go. The cap does not exist for the Kansas City Chiefs. Now you look at the Chiefs receiving room, dude. Like I don't see a game that the Chiefs should go into this year that they shouldn't be favored to win. Like Hollywood Brown's going to be a stud. Xavier Worthy's a stud. Rashee Rice looks like a fucking problem right now. And you have Pacheco who runs angry and Travis Kelce who's just doing his world tours and living high. So plus that defense, like, I don't know. Chiefs got a good formula. Maybe the Packers should just follow their formula.
I mean, I think the formula really comes down to you draft and develop a good quarterback, obviously, and then you have to hit on other draft picks that aren't in the first round when it comes to your skill positions. The stat that always frustrated me as a Packers fan was that how many touchdown passes Aaron Rodgers threw to a first round wide receiver stat. And it was almost like bad teams telling on themselves, because it's not like the Packers didn't have good receivers when Aaron Rodgers was in Green Bay. I mean, you can list the Jordy Nelsons, Greg Jennings, Davante Adams, like all these guys that they found in the later round. So I always took that stat as more of a testament to the Packers' ability to draft and develop later round guys and not move up and take, like, have to feel like they need to draft a wide receiver in the first round every year. Because I feel like that's what bad NFL franchises do, is they have to continually draft high skill position players. And if you're a good franchise, I mean, I think of the Steelers, I think of the Chiefs, I think of the Packers, you find that value, and that's the formula. It's not like you call it the Bengals, you call it the Cowboys too. Like, drafting these really talented guys high is great, but then you got to pay them all. And how do you,
then you got to pay them all
in a salary cap league?
No. And it's, I think the tough thing with receivers is like the drop off in production versus dollars spent. Like, okay, so what if Justin Jefferson gets you 1,500 yards receiving and you're paying him? What did he just get paid? $40 million a year, I think? What was it?
Yeah, 35, I think.
35. So if you're getting $35 million a year for 1,500 yards, right? 10 touchdowns, whatever. I, as a GM, would rather have a receiver that's going to make $5 million, $10 million a year and put up 1,000 yards. Like the amount of the cap versus the production drop-off, there's a real discrepancy there where I think the quarterback's the only position that can really justify that crazy cap percentage to production, because it, I mean, you look at, like, look at Baker Mayfield's deal, right? He's got $33 million a year. Getting a Joe Burrow or someone like that for $50 million, $55 million, like it doesn't look the same discrepancy-wise as a receiver does. Like Justin Jefferson to a, let's just say Mike Evans. Mike Evans is going to put up 1,000. Justin Jefferson probably put up 1,500, but like Mike Evans for whatever his contract is versus Justin Jefferson for 3X that contract or whatever, it's different than in the quarterback room. And I just think, I don't know, man, there's some money ball to be played in this. And I think some teams just like the jersey sales and they like the, you know what I mean? They like the other stuff, but some teams like winning ball games. So I'll leave it at that.
Yeah. I mean, there probably are some team, correct me if I'm wrong, there probably are teams that are not trying to win Super Bowls. Like, what percentage of teams in the NFL do you think year in and year out aren't actually seriously contending or attempting to contend for a Super Bowl?
Yeah, I think they all are thinking they are until week one is over. And then week one hits and they get smacked in the mouth and like, all right, we're still who we were. Let's make sure we sell these tickets. You know what I mean? Like, there's a real business. Like, the business of the NFL is views and fans. It's not necessarily winning Super Bowls. Sadly enough, Super Bowls help you make money, but one out of 32 does that. So I think the next best consolation prize is, can you fill the seats, make an exciting product, and sell jerseys, like sell merch. That's the business of the NFL.
And so the NFL is, I think, the easiest league to get by with a mediocre team, because unlike the NBA where there are 82 games and by like halfway through the season, it's pretty obvious which teams are going to be contenders and which teams aren't going to be contenders. And the NFL, we've seen teams with losing records make the playoffs. So unless you start the season 0-6, you're still going to sell tickets on the back of this notion that you have a shot, right? Like every team has a shot in the NFL until maybe week 12.
And you also have like divisional games that matter regardless of how bad you suck. Like, there's some real rivalry stuff that plays in, like when Mahomes comes to town, you're going to sell tickets. Like, there's, it's a unique business structure that I think when you look at some of these contracts and you, like, it makes me scratch my head of like, are you trying to win? Because if you were, you'd be playing a little bit more money ball than what you're doing. But I'm not a GM right now. I'm just a content creator.
And there's scarcity that plays into it too, right? Back to the NBA comparison. It's hard to sell a ticket to tomorrow's game when you play today and the day after that and the day before that. But the NFL, you get 8 home games a year. Maybe sometimes 7. I mean, those games.
Yeah, traveling now. Jaguars might get 5 home games, you know?
Yeah, for real. Okay, I want to move out to New York because there was a video going around of Aaron Rodgers and Garrett Wilson getting a little heated on the sidelines. And I'm sure it's something that you saw up close. Can you break down what was happening in this conversation and why it's a big deal or totally overblown.
Yeah, I don't think this is a big deal at all. I think this is awesome. I think you see two guys that absolutely care a shit ton in July about how their season's going to go. Both are probably feeling some sort of way about last year. I look at Garrett Wilson like a young stud that's a dog, but also he is still young and he has a lot to learn. And I'd imagine that Aaron's not going to get into an argument that he's not going to win, if I know him at all. So I'd imagine that one person saw it one way. Aaron needed him to see it his way. And at the end of the day, even if you think the quarterback is wrong, you need to see it the way the quarterback is going to see it. Because at the end of the day, he's the one that needs to throw you the ball. So if you saw something one way, let him hear you out. But he's going to have the final say because it needs to be done to his liking. And every quarterback is different. And some see it this way, some see it that way. So I'm going to chalk that up to arguing because they both care a lot. And they were probably like, it's training camp, few days in, getting kind of hot, whatever. But Aaron on the field is going to want it done a certain way. And he's got years and years and years of examples of it getting done a certain way. So I think for Garrett, he probably has already had this conversation with him, knowing Aaron, just like, hey, you can fall in line a little bit more and he's going to feed you and you're going to have a monster freaking year. Just know that that's what's going to come with it. Aaron's not a guy that's going to let the details slip. He is obsessive over the details. So like lock in on your details. I don't know what the conversation was about, but I'd imagine one side was a little more right than the other.
Sure. If you give me an example of a conversation he's had, maybe not this specific instance, but what are some of the details that Aaron is particular about?
Yeah. So let's just say, I don't know, slowing down on an out route if it's cover two, right? Like say you have a 5-yard out route and on the paper that's drawn, it is a 5-yard out and you run fast as you can out. Well, if it's cover two, you're not going to want to run out into a DB that's waiting for you, especially if there's like an outside release go that's going to then pass off. So a lot of guys that have played with him for a while know the nuances of what's not necessarily written on the paper, but they've learned within the game and how he plays that you can alter things based on how they're drawn in the book. There's a real life version and a book version, and Aaron plays by the real life version. So he would have conversations about that all the time. Hey, it is drawn this way, but this is what I expect from you. And if you do it once and you mess it up, like, okay, but like, don't mess it up twice. And so those are just some things that like, it could be any nuanced detail. It could be, hey, you didn't look at me when I signaled you. And Aaron gives really subtle signals on things. And a lot of times he doesn't want to give away a signal that's super clear. So he'll be super discreet about it. Sometimes he won't even look at you and he'll just put like a signal out to the side and you just know that's for you. But you have to understand the full like context of the play to know that he's talking to you specifically. And so there's just, I'd imagine a lot of learning going on in this training camp.
How did those conversations get diffused? Because they look heated in the moment. And I have no doubt that they're probably both animated and they're both passionate. And like you said, one side probably feels like they're more right than the other side. Does Aaron do a good job at being like, hey, we're still good? Like, obviously, and you saw him talk to the media afterwards. Like, he's totally playing it down and diffusing it. But I'm sure there's some back and forth happening even after that discussion.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is just like, it's just a communication issue, right? Like, it's you just need to hear both sides, get to a solution, and sometimes it takes a little longer than others. But I know that he's a person that is going to squash whatever it is and finish whatever it is before it's moved on. Like, it's not going to be something that drags on for days.
Was there ever a moment that you were around him and he got really passionate about something where you're almost confused about why he needed it to be a certain way? I'm assuming someone who's so good at what he does can be so particular that to a lot of people it's like, all right, man, like that doesn't seem like that big of a deal.
A younger me would have said yes, but the older that I got and the longer that I was in the NFL and saw how the different starters operated, like you need to have boxes checked as a player, especially at quarterback, and know that there's no hesitation in what other people are going to do because you're so reliant on everybody else. So even though it may have seemed like a small detail, like those things come up in games and I've seen those things blown because someone wasn't locked in on the details. And it costs you a game, then it costs you a season. So he is so particular because he has so much scar tissue of all these things that have either gone well or gone wrong throughout the years that at some point in time, that same mistake was probably made by somebody else that cost a game. And so why does it matter in training camp in July? Well, because it mattered in December in Green Bay. And so I think that's where some of the particularness comes from, but it comes out of like, you want to be perfect. You want to make sure that as a quarterback, like when you have a full arsenal of protections and audibles and quick game signals and adjustments at your disposal, you want to make sure that any single person that's on the field is tuned into what could come up that you didn't necessarily talk about in the meeting room or in the game plan for that week, but it was something that Aaron saw that he referenced from 4 weeks before, that he expects you to know that signal regardless of if it was talked about in the last month. And he expects you to know it within a split second. So those are some of the things that I know he got particular about that, in my opinion, mattered so much. And that's why he loves his guys like Davante Adams. And that's why he likes Allen Lazard, because those guys, Allen Lazard is a good football player. He did not have a great year last year. Allen Lazard's value this year is going to be so much higher because of who he's playing on the field with. He is so in tune and has been with what Aaron does all the time. That's what's amplified his value. And as soon as Aaron was off the field, Allen's value went down. So this year I'd expect it to go right back up. So those are just some nuances into how all of it actually works. But again, that's a veteran quarterback versus a young quarterback doesn't have all of that at his disposal at any given time.
I think it's a great point about Lazard. And I was connecting dots as you were talking. Like, that's probably why he wants to bring along Nate Hackett. You know, he likes to go be with his coaches, be with his players. They're all in that same vernacular and talking about the same thing. Cause I'm assuming a lot of times coaches will just defer to Aaron. Like, when it's not the wide receiver coach that's in that conversation with Garrett Wilson, it's Aaron talking to Garrett Wilson about how he wants things done. So I'm sure it's helpful for him to have his guys around, so those conversations don't need to keep happening.
That is so true. And I think that's a good point. Like, when you're really in the NFL in general, position coaches oftentimes are not necessarily the ones determining how things are done. They're the ones relaying information with as clear communication as possible. So if Aaron wants something done a certain way, Aaron tells the OC and the quarterback coach. OC and quarterback coach relays that change to the O-line coach, the receivers coach, tight end coach. Like, all the coaches are then given the information precisely, and their job is to then distribute it to their players in their rooms as accurate as possible within their own vernacular, so the guys know what Aaron wants the first time. Like, that's like the top down how it works. So same thing, like when I was with Shanahan, Shanahan was the top dog as the OC. If Shanahan had a change, it went to the coaches, and the coaches needed to explain it to their players in their room in a way that they wanted it done. And that was when I was there with Brian Greasy and Brock Purdy and Jimmy Garoppolo. Kyle would say something, and then when he left the room, Brian would be like, look, this is what I actually think he means and how he wants it done. So take it for what it's worth, but I think this is what he's trying to communicate to you, because at the end of the day, everyone communicates differently. And so for Jimmy, if Kyle said one thing in a certain language, Jimmy heard it in a different language, it was Brian's job as the quarterback coach to like make sure Jimmy heard him the right way and is doing it the way that Kyle wants it. That's how it was. And so it's just, it's a unique power structure in the NFL.
Yeah, they're like translators. Those position coaches are almost like translators. That's really interesting. 100%. Speaking of wide receivers, we had another little extension. DJ Moore, 4 years, $110 million, locked up through 2029. Talk to me about this Bears wide receiver room. I am getting a little bit nervous with some of the talent that they have accrued.
Yeah, dude, the Bears could very well be a problem. It is going to be how quick can Caleb Williams catch up to the NFL speed, and how well can the offense and the OC simplify the game in a way that he can play early without having to think too much and just be him. All he has to do is play point guard. He has Keenan Allen. He's got Adunze. He's got Moore. He's got Kmet. He's got Swift. And their defense, top five defense in the league. So all things to say, Bears sneaky money this year. And do I have a preseason bet that they make the playoffs? I might. I do. I actually do. So I think the Bears find a way to make the playoffs. I think Caleb Williams is absolutely loaded with the receivers that he has, something Justin Fields never had. And Caleb has the best situation that a number one overall quarterback has ever been in, probably in the history of the NFL. And I don't think that's a stretch. We know how it goes. Number one picks typically go to the worst team. The Bears were really close last year. What were they, 7-10 with a bunch of injuries? Yeah. I mean, the NFC North is going to be an absolute dogfight this year.
What do you expect from this Bears offense early on? It's sort of an interesting combination of a rookie quarterback, a veteran wide receiver, a wide receiver from a different team last year, a rookie wide receiver. How does this all come together in the first couple of weeks? Is it going to be a little clunky, or do you think they're going to get off right away?
Dude, if I'm them, I don't think it's going to be crazy clunky. If I'm their OC, I'm trying to get as many completion plays as possible, like quick game, get the ball quick, shifts and motions, create different mismatches and leverage. And I'm actually going to lean on hurry up a little bit. Hurry up to get into a rhythm for a college quarterback that's now going to the NFL that ran a lot of that. A lot of teams in the NFL, for whatever reason, huddle every single play and they try to bleed the clock and they wait until the last minute to snap it. If I'm the Bears, dude, I'm trying to get Caleb Williams acclimated ASAP, running, getting things running, RPOs, quick game, screen, some straight drop back with yes, no's. Like, I'm trying to make this simple and fast for him because I also think the more plays that he gets under his belt early, the more it'll serve them later in the year. So we'll see how it plays out. Maybe they'll run a fast scheme, but, you know, defensive-minded head coaches hate when offenses run a lot of plays because it means their defense is on the field more. So they're going to be running up against some of that with Eberflus. But I'm really excited to see how they approach this because if all the reports that we're seeing about Caleb are true, he probably could start off pretty hot. And, I mean, we've seen Keenan Allen ball out. We've seen Adunze make some plays in camp. I mean, Moore can take a screen 70 yards with no problem. And Komet's got massive mitts. So I'm optimistic about the Bears season for them this year.
All right. And more Bears news. Tariq Cohen retires this week. I just love these smaller gadget guys who just find their way into the NFL. Mm-hmm. I was talking to Austin Eckler earlier this week for a different interview. And just the amount of times that these guys probably could have just said, football is not for me. I'm going to give up. And then they don't, and they make it, is incredible. So I don't know if you've ever gotten the chance to meet Tariq, but he seems like a good dude and overcame a lot, I assume, to get to the NFL.
Yeah, Tariq is awesome. I actually know him personally. We used to play games together. We used to play Fortnite together, against each other, with each other. We played Madden with each other on the same team. Some really cool content there. But he is just such a good person, and he was so electric. And I was actually, unfortunately, there when he tore his knee up in that game against the Falcons that kind of derailed the last few years of his career. It was so unfortunate. It was on a punt return, I believe, and he just got, I think a guy got pushed from behind into his knee as he was catching it, and it was brutal. And the fact that he even came back to go get back on a practice squad and get back on a field was immaculate in itself, but really want to just congratulate him on an awesome career. And again, underdog season, man, he was awesome. Always rose to the occasion and was electric on the field. So loved watching him. Good player, better person.
One of those names that we're going to talk about in 10 years, and you're going to be going around the room with your friends, naming random NFL players. And Tariq Cohen is going to be a really good pull. In other news, Bucks make Tristan Wirfs the highest paid lineman in NFL history, 5 years, 140.6. What are the Buccaneers doing? It's kind of an interesting way they're building this team. It seems like when you have a guy like Baker Mayfield, you know what your floor is. You also know that your ceiling maybe isn't really high, and now they're giving Tristan Wirfs a lot of money. I guess it's not a bad investment, but what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, he's obviously a really good player. I don't really know. Maybe this is because they're saving money with Baker Mayfield, only making $30 million a year. Like, they're able to do some of these other things. The Bucs O-line was pretty solid. They have some good players up front. I don't really know a whole lot about, like, what their team is built like. You know, like, sometimes they're great, sometimes they're not. Sometimes they make big plays, sometimes they only put up 7 points. Like, I think last year's Bucks were a very much a who can they be? They could be really good. They could be really bad. They made the playoffs. They won a playoff game, right? But I don't know, man. They won a playoff game, didn't they? Yeah, they beat the Eagles.
Yeah, like they beat the Eagles.
Yeah, I don't know. I think we're gonna find out about the Bucks, but I also think same division Falcons look like greatest show on turf part two. So, I don't know, man. I guess pay your big boys up front. That's what we're saying the Packers should do. So
yeah, you can't knock them if that's your yeah. prescription for the Packers. I guess why not? If you got a guy, pay a guy.
Yeah, totally.
We also had this week Madden release their ranking lists for the wide receivers, the running backs. I've seen a couple others come out. You drew issue with both of them. Part of me thinks that these are just engagement bait for guys like you to talk about, and it worked, but I'm gonna give you the chance to talk about here. Breece Hall, Bijan, notably not in the top 10 for the running back list. What do you make of that?
And Breece Hall's like what, number two running back in the year expected this year? To not be in the top 10 in Madden is just five. Is absurd. Bijan's definitely top five. Like, Bijan makes plays that other people physically cannot make. There's people in that top 10 list that I know never could make those plays and still can. A lot of people are still riding the hype of their old years in Madden, which I don't know. Maybe I need to become an adjuster as another part-time gig, but I don't know, man. To not see Breece up there, to not see Bijan up there, I would take both of those over almost any guy on that list, except for a few. Also, little sneaky shout out to Jahmyr Gibbs, nowhere to be found. I know he gets overshadowed sometimes because of Montgomery, but Gibbs is the best running back that they have, and he's one of the top running backs in the league too. So didn't want to leave him off this list, but I don't know, man. Madden, let's talk, because there's a lot of stuff going on. And look, our quarterback rankings are going to be going live weekly, and I would really like for them to reflect the rankings in Madden. So let's talk.
Sure. It seems like you didn't have as much of an issue with the wide receiver list. And looking back at it, you know, Tyreek, Justin Jefferson, CeeDee Lamb, AJ Brown, Amon-Ra, you have Devontae still up there. Maybe you could say, is Stephon Diggs too high? But it doesn't seem like you had much of an issue there. Did you?
Yeah, I feel like the receiver list was a little more like preference. Like, I would not have Diggs up there as much based on what he did last year. But I'm also like, I don't know, I'm Nico Collins' dog. Like, there's just a lot of dogs that I don't think get the same credit for being a dog in Madden as they actually are in real life.
Yeah. Who are these people? Why aren't you an adjuster? Like, what qualifications do you have to have?
I don't know. I think we gotta have that conversation for real this time.
Maybe they'll see the list. They'll see the weekly QB list, and
they'll
and
see it. We'll they'll know where they know we're dialed in. Correlation. Man. Look, they're watching. Just know they're watching.
That's what I'm saying. They're not going to pay you. They're just going to see your rankings and just steal your work. And I'm saying maybe we got to get paid for that.
Maybe
too.
We drop right, it in their ear first.
Last thing, real quick, we had an interesting Spider-Man meme moment happen this week when Nebraska QB Dylan Raiola came out dressed exactly like Patrick Mahomes. I don't know, Kurt, can you tell me the difference in this picture?
I think they're the same person. To be honest, I know which one's which. However, I thought that the Chiefs had training camp at Nebraska for some reason, because he was built like Mahomes. He had the same glasses, the same goatee. Like, he obviously did this to look like Mahomes. And I hope that I haven't seen anything from the kid, but hopefully it was just a meme. Because
I don't
he
know
can
if it
sling
is.
It. Does he want to be Mahomes 2.0? Is this a marketing ploy? NIL deals at stake? I don't know.
Would not be the worst decision. I mean,
this would be a really good marketing ploy.
Yeah.
But as far as like a scheme, yeah.
You have to watch this guy walk around and even throw. Like, the Mahomes mannerisms are almost uncanny. Like, it is almost like he's doing it on purpose. And again, I don't know. It's not a bad move, because now every time I think Dylan Raiola, I'm going to think Patrick Mahomes. And if that's what you correlate a college quarterback with, you could be doing a lot worse for yourself. So it might just
be this is a futures planted seed, 4D chess for being the number one overall pick in a few years. That's what this is about. This is all about his future draft stock, because everyone's looking for the next Mahomes and he's over here like, he's right here. So I'm going to say he might have a marketing team behind him, just fitting him with the Oakley shades and the Adidas gear and the walking and the dad bod. He's got quite the Mahomes dad bod to start, from what I can tell. So, like, big respect there. But I also saw that he could sling it. So I'm like, hey, just maybe by the time he's a senior, after he gets this wave of, oh, is he Mahomes 2.0? He like branches off to be like his own version of that guy. But yeah, he's definitely and he's wearing number 15. So, I mean,
he's trying. And that's what I'm saying.
He definitely wants to be.
And Mahomes for a lot of reasons is the best quarterback you could try to associate yourself with, because not only is he the best quarterback in the NFL, but coming out of college, he was relatively unknown. And I think a lot of people look back and kick themselves for not realizing how good Mahomes would be. And if he could just show that he can throw the ball really far, do some of those fun off-platform throws, and then also just walk and act like Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
People might just they might do the simple analysis. I know it's much deeper than throwing the ball far and doing off platform throws, but you could trick yourself into doing the easy math and saying, you know what?
I'm on the Dylan Raiola train. You know what, this is either going to be, this is going to end up really well and it's going to work, or it's going to be like Baby Gronk. Nowhere in between. It's either going to derail or it's going to be a little Mahomey. But we'll have to stay tuned to find out.
One more thing before we leave. The Packers dropped their all-white uniforms today. Instant reactions from you. The white helmets make their appearance.
clean. Like, I can just picture Jordan Love dropping back, getting zero blitzed, and just layering a post over the top in an all-white uniform to a Wicks over the shoulder, game-winning touchdown against whoever they're going to play. Feels like they busted out against the Vikings, maybe, but we'll find out. Can't wait to see it happen.
Actually, they announced they're wearing them against the Texans, which I'm even more excited for. That's going to be a big game for this podcast.
That is going to be a big game. The Jordan Love, CJ Stroud hive just collaborating head-to-head. I like it.
Yeah. I think that game will have just a lot of good sportsmanship all around, because it feels like the CJ Stroud boys and the Jordan Love guys, we can all be happy. Like, there's no need for us to
air it out.
Let's get a lot
of yards thrown, a lot of touchdowns, and like have a good game. Who cares who wins? But we know who we want to win. However, like, let's just see a good ball game and some good QB stats.
I love it. Sweet. All right. We will be back next week with more. We'll have real football to talk about. The preseason is starting. You can sniff that week one game, Eagles Packers. I cannot wait.
It's so close. Until next time, gang.